You're halfway through leading a performance review with one of your staff, and it's time to bring up the TM problem. Time management.
The Jonathan Halls Podcast.
John, you start. I've noticed you're pulling longer hours than Tracy. John shifts in his chair. I mean, John, you've been given the same amount of work, and you're great at what you do. I just don't understand why it's taking so long. For some bosses, addressing time management isn't just a matter of work-life balance as it was for John's manager. John's manager, he was simply worried that John was spending too much time at the office. Time management can also be a performance problem. Take, for example, Jackie. Jackie regularly misses deadlines. She's constantly flustered, and she seems to be really busy. So what's going on? Well, it's poor time management. Time management is very often a performance issue, and managers have no alternative but to address it with their staff. But it can be tough to solve. So what's the answer? A time management class? A time and emotion study? Trite tips such as don't look at your email in the morning, or always keep a clear desk, or start an ABC list. Well, I don't think any of those are necessarily the option. Avoiding email in the morning, for example, well, that might improve Fred's time management because Fred's easily distracted. And he isn't as focused in the morning as he might be later on in the afternoon. But for Wendy, doing email in the afternoon may work against her efficiency because that's when her brain is less effective. She's better off in the morning. You see, everyone's different. No one solution will work for everyone. This is a key to understanding how to get the best out of your time. Time management, well, it's deeply personal. It's affected as much by your calendar, work style, personality, and physiology as it is by methods that you might use to improve it. So what causes poor time management? Well, one cause is self-discipline. Time management at the end of the day isn't just about knowing what you have to do. You really have to actually do something. The crucial bridge between knowing it has to be done and doing it can be quite tough for some people. Another reason for poor time management is people can get their priorities wrong. For example, Sylvia might be good at doing stuff, but she does the wrong things. And we're going to focus on that just a little today, knowing what the right things are. A third cause is misunderstanding what time management is simply because of the term itself. Let me explain. No one can actually manage time. Here's the news. There are 24 hours in a day, 60 minutes in an hour, and that's not going to change. What we're really managing is our priorities and our resources. It's what we do that must fit into time. It's not about fitting time around what we do. Now, fourth reason is that many people attempt to multitask. And multitasking, well, that's a myth. Anyone who thinks he or she is multitasking is actually juggling many tasks. And when they juggle those tasks, they're doing each one at a time, but switching between them at a very fast rate. So people really get things done when they focus on just one thing at a time. And it's been proven scientifically. Two management thinkers who have liberated me from the old industrial mindset of treating time management in a rigid manner are Jim Collins, who many people know for his book From Good to Great, and Peter Drucker, known as the father of modern management thinking. Now, I've heard Jim Collins talk twice. Collins wrote the New York Times bestseller From Good to Great. He's been enormously influential in the world of leadership and personal development. Now, both times I heard Collins speak, he asked people in the audience to raise their hands if they kept a to-do list. Do you keep a to-do list? Well, conventional wisdom tells us that if you're an organized person, you keep a to-do list. In fact, mention a to-do list, and you probably visualize those well-dressed professional types wearing pinstripe suits and carrying BlackBerries. Or 10 years ago, they carried Daily Planets. Do you remember them? The fact that many of us never make it halfway down our to-do list is immaterial. Culturally, to-do lists are sacramental. If you've got one, people assume you're organized. If not, well, people call you sloppy and disorganized. So Collins asks the crowds on both occasions that I heard him, he says, do you keep a to-do list? And about 96% of the people put their hand up. And some of those people putting up their hand were like me. You know, those who raise their hands out of embarrassment because we don't have a to-do list, but we don't want people to find us out. Once they've raised their hands, he looks around and he can see that very few people don't. And he gets them to raise a hand if they've got a not to do list. Do you have a not to do list? Only a handful of people will thrust their arms in the air. Well, at these functions, Collins went on to say that your not to do list is just as important as your to do list. Identifying what we should do enables us to stop doing things that hijack our time. So perhaps one of the keys to unlocking the secrets of smart time management is identifying what you should not do. So if having a not-to-do list is one key that unlocks a door to smart time management, what's the other key? Well, now's the time for us to draw on the wisdom of the father of management thinking, Peter Drucker. In his book, The Effective Executive, Drucker lists three common time sponges. Now, we're talking about things on your to-do list that if you don't do them, nobody will notice. When I ask participants in my leadership courses to list common time sponges, they usually list things like the BlackBerry or iPhone, email, surfing the web, taking phone calls whenever the phone rings, and talking around the water cooler. Now, the issue with these suggestions is that they will be different for everybody. You see, some people find BlackBerries very distracting, but for some people, they find it very helpful in finding clients and closing deals. Likewise, email can be good and bad. Keeping up to date with email may in fact mean you catch an important message that helps you avoid expensive litigation. But for somebody else, it may simply be a tool of procrastination. Talking around the water cooler, well, that might help you build the rapport with your staff that you need to be an effective leader, whereas for others, it just simply leads to gossip. Now, the reality is that these suggestions that people offer in the seminars I run really aren't time sponges. They're actually symptoms of time sponges. If they don't support your business goal, they are time sponges. And luckily, Drucker goes deeper than just analysing symptoms. He says that time sponges are one of three things. They either don't need to be done, they're better done by others, or they require other people to do things that aren't necessary. Let's link back to Collins' tip of drawing up a not-to-do list and think about both Collins' and Drucker's ideas. Let's put them together to understand how we can all be smart time managers. So as we do that, as we think about how what we shouldn't do, what we need to do is to look at what we do on a day-to-day basis and say, what doesn't need to be done? And the way to find out is to ask those three questions. Does it really need to be done? Is it better done by somebody else? Or is it something that's just going to require other people to do unnecessary things? How do we start? Well, start with a simple time and motion study, the traditional tool used in a lot of time management courses. Spend a few moments writing a time log of what you did yesterday. If you want to be more comprehensive, map out a whole week, or in fact, keep a piece of paper beside you and keep a calendar, a diary as you go along. Write down everything you did from when you checked emails, took phone calls, went to the restroom, or out for a cigarette. When you've got your list after a day or a week, depending upon how much time you want to spend, ask these questions of each individual item on your list. Did I really need to do this? If I didn't do it, what would happen? The second question, could this have been better done by someone else? Third, did this require someone else to do something unnecessary? Let's briefly examine these questions. Okay, three questions. Did I really need to do this? Could this have been better done by someone else? And did this require someone else to do something unnecessary? The first question, did I really need to do this? Now, be tough on yourself. A lot of leaders do work that they used to do as subordinates because they can't let go. One CEO, who was formerly the company's chief engineer, continued to check blueprints after he'd moved into the chief executive's office. Now, checking blueprints isn't the job of the CEO. Checking blueprints is a chief engineer's job. Now, if the old CEO had checked up on those blueprints when the new CEO had been a little bit more junior and back in the job of chief engineer, he would have been outraged. What he needs to do is let go of the past and move on. He doesn't need to do it. Second question, could this task have been done better by someone else? Now, leaders hate this question. A good example is journalists who are promoted to editors. They don't like to let go of reporting all that often, but the reporters are just as good as their editors. The difference is their reporters aren't hassled by HR and distracted by management. Reporters have the brain space to file a better story. And of course, the editors or the leaders in the organisation need to concentrate and spend most of their brain power focusing on leading the organisation. The third question is, did this require someone else to do something that wasn't necessary? Now, some bosses overcommit their staff to work on unnecessary things. Maybe it's to please a customer. Sometimes, in fact, too many times, it's because of their ego. They want to show off, or they want to outperform some of their friends. I know one boss who would always volunteer her staff for projects that had absolutely nothing to do with her division. All she wanted to do was to show off and show she had greater influence in the organisation. Now, the irony was, there are other divisions within her organisation that had people that could have done that for the organisation. In fact, they could have done a better job. But she had to prove her way, and that is what's stopping her being more effective in her current job. So where does a rubber hit the road? You're doing a staff review and you have to broach the TM words. When you sit down with a subordinate to help them develop their time management skills, ask these three questions. Do you really need to do this to meet our business objectives? Could this be better done by someone else? And does this require someone else to do something that's unnecessary? Of course, to ask these questions meaningfully, you need to be very aware of what your objectives are. You can't analyze a task to determine if it's really necessary unless you're really clear about your business plan's objectives and mission. But goals, well, they're a conversation for another time. As are how to handle question number two, which is all about delegation. But look at what you're doing and look at what your staff members are doing. Do they really need to do these tasks to meet your divisions, your team, or your organization's business objectives? Remember, to be an effective manager in a complex, fast-changing environment, you and your teams need to know what to do. And you need to develop the self-discipline that ensures you don't waste your valuable time doing things that you don't need to do simply because somebody else might do them for you. I'm Jonathan Halls.